Hi, I'm Frank Ferris, one of the principals of the Palliative Care Interdisciplinary Curriculum. I want to personally thank you for joining us for this module in our series on effective teaching strategies.
Good morning. It's great to be back with all of you again this morning. We're going to spend a couple of hours doing some faculty development, so working on your teaching skills as well as your presenting skills. We're going to start the morning off talking about the Kolb model and learning styles. So are those terms that any of you have had any experience with or exposure to in the past?
So I'm not as familiar with Kolb's model, but my exposure to learning styles has been the different ways that people learn in the most optimal way. So things like visual, auditory, kinesthetic learning.
Awesome. So that's what everybody almost always says, is auditory, visual, kinesthetic is what most folks have had exposure to. There are lots of these different kinds of theories out there. I want to expose you to one that is commonly talked about in medical education and is also kind of common part of the language at Ohio Health and especially at Riverside in medical education, so that if you're speaking with other teachers, you're kind of speaking a common language with all of them. As always, this is going to be highly interactive. Interrupt me anytime with questions. So our objectives, what are you going to walk out here knowing how to do? And you all did camp with me, so you all know how important objectives are now, right? We're going to talk about the four steps of the Kolb model. We're going to identify which of the Honey Mumford learning styles you identify with. I don't care that you remember these names more than the concepts, okay? So the concepts are the important part, but I want you to know at least where they come from. So I think that helps make it a little more concrete. And then we're going to brainstorm ways to incorporate Kolb's theory into your fellowship as a learner and a teacher, because as fellows, you are both. And frankly, I hope for the rest of your career that you're both, that you never stop learning and that you identify ways to optimize your learning to keep yourself at the top of your game throughout your career, okay? So I'm going to give you just a minute to absorb what's on this slide, and then I want us to talk about it. And I'll read it out loud in a sec. So let me read these out loud. Experience is a teacher of all things. Mr. Caesar himself. The only source of knowledge is experience. Dr. Einstein. We do not learn from experience, we learn from reflecting on experience. John Dewey. So if you've ever seen the Dewey Decimal System, that's a dude. If you're not thinking about what you are learning, you probably are not learning. So what kind of ideas and concepts jump out to you from what's on this slide?
Interaction.
Say that again for the mic, please.
Interaction.
Interaction. Okay, what else?
That experience is important and you learn from it, but you need to think about it for that.
Ah, very well said. So there's something about learning that is more than just having your butt in a chair and have information come at you one way, right? There needs to be some interaction, especially as adults. As kids, maybe that kind of works and you get a lot of one-way information, what we call pedagogy. Now we're talking about andragogy, how grown-ups learn. And grown-ups learn by interacting, by doing things, and by thinking about them. And that's what Kolb says. So this is Dr. David Kolb. He is an American educational theorist, so I think he's still alive. And he developed what's called the experiential learning model. And we're going to talk about each step of that model now. So according to Dr. Kolb, when we learn, the process kicks off by us having some sort of concrete experience. That experience might be sitting in a classroom. It might be caring for a patient on the wards. It might be working with another resident or student or another learning. But we have some experience. And then we think about it. We reflect on it. We might not do this in a conscious, intentional way, but as adult learners, this is what Dr. Kolb says happens when we learn about something. So we reflect on it, we review it, we think about it, and then we take what we learned after we've thought about it, and we set it inside of some bigger context, what he called abstract conceptualization. We make a conclusion. If we learn a medical fact, you guys are learning a lot of medical facts this year in your fellowship, you kind of set that fact within whatever framework it is that you're learning about in the hospice palliative world. So if there's, you know, a specific skill set related to compassionate extubation, maybe, for example, you know, everything that you learn about that knowledge and experience-wise fits into a framework you've created in your head. And then you try it. You've got this information, you've thought about it, you've set it inside a framework, then you're going to practice. So remember we talked about when we did the Kemp model how important it is for adult learners to get the chance to put new knowledge into action right away. So those ideas are very congruent with what Dr. Kolb said. Once you've got it, you got to go out and try it and do it. And guess what? When you go out and do it, that's a concrete experience. And then the cycle starts again. So a lot of skills that we learn in medicine are not things that you're great at the first time you try them, right? Most of you in residency probably had to drop a line at some point. Maybe not our resident psychiatrist. Maybe even that person. I don't know. All right, but you had, the first time you did it didn't go so great, did it? Fifth or sixth time you did it probably went a lot better. And each time you tried, you kind of added through the cycle and enriched and deepened your understanding of what you were doing. Those four steps, okay? We all right? So we have an experience. We think about it. We generalize. We set it in context. And then we test it. We put it to use out in the real world. Again, experience, reflect, conceptualize, reiterate, practice. And that act of practice is a new concrete experience. And this is how your learners, according to Dr. Kolb, are learning when they're out on the wards and in the office. So you're pretty cool with those four steps now. Let's take a look here. It's kind of these two continuums that Dr. Kolb talks about. This idea of perception, okay? And at the top is this idea of feeling. So when you have a concrete experience, you're usually having some sort of feeling related to that. And at the bottom, this idea of thinking. So when you're doing that conceptualization, you're doing some thinking in terms of where you put it in process. And then this processing continuum on the other axis. And when you're doing this, you know, experimentation, you're putting what you learned into work, there's doing. You're doing something here, as opposed to when you're on this reflective side, you're watching. So when you're up here having your concrete experience, that's kind of a feeling, a visceral experience. When you're doing this reflective observation, that can be more watching, more passive. This abstract conceptualization where you're actually thinking, you're putting it into some sort of context, and then you go out and you do. So processing, perception. These continuums are less important than thinking about which of these are attached to each step. Okay? So Kolb took all of this and kind of said, all right, I think there are people who like operating at one particular part of this model better than other particular parts. They're more comfortable at certain steps. So he theorized that there are people who have this, and don't remember these learning style names because I'm going to give you some other ones that are easier to remember in a second. I just want you to know where they came from, okay? But he theorized that there was this diverging learning style, people who liked to live in this quadrant. They wanted to have a concrete experience and think about it. He theorized that there are people who like to live in this quadrant, assimilators, who liked to think about things and then put them into big context. He theorized that there are people who lived in this quadrant, convergers, who like to think about things and then go do something about it. And he theorized that there are people who lived in this quadrant, accommodators, who like to do something and then take it, have a concrete experience, and feel about it. So the most important thing is just that this idea of these quadrants, okay? And the next two theorists we're going to talk about did a much better job talking about those quadrants and how we can use them in a concrete way with our teaching, all right? So let's take a break for a minute. Turn to page 2 of your handout. I want you to think about something that you recently learned. Maybe it's something you learned yesterday as part of the fellowship. Maybe it's something you learned over the weekend related to something completely unrelated to medicine. Maybe there is a football fact you learned on Sunday that you'd never heard before, a concept or a play, I don't know. Something that you recently learned. Try to make it pretty specific, whatever that was. Take a minute and think about, for each step of the Kolb model, how did you do that? So you had a concrete experience. What was the experience? You thought about it. How'd you think about it? You conceptualized it. You put it into some sort of framework. Where did it fit? And then you tried something. Let's just take a minute or two and work through that. And we're going to talk about it. All right, cool. Can I give you my example first? So I recently relearned how to place an IUD. I had known how to do it, but I hadn't had the opportunity to do it in the job before I came here, so I got really rusty. I needed to go back and get my training back up again. We're family docs. We do it all, so IUDs included. So what did I do? Well, I went to a workshop on how to insert an IUD. So that was my concrete experience. Then I had to do some reflecting on it. You will find out, though it may be no great surprise to you already in our time together, this is not my strongest suit in the model, but I had to sit and review the course materials and reflect on it a little bit afterwards, so I would kind of solidify it in my brain. And then I was like, oh yeah, this is very similar to another procedure that I already know and that I'm really comfortable with doing. So family docs or anybody else with any GYN background, endometrial biopsy, super similar to IUD in terms of the procedure. It's like, I'm really good at doing endometrial biopsies. So yeah, I remember IUD is very similar. So I placed it in a context of what I already knew. And then they gave us a little model to practice on so I could practice on the model. And then the next step, of course, was to practice on a human being with one of my colleagues hanging out with me. So a new step in the model. And then reflecting on how it went with my colleague afterwards. Making any changes or tweaks that I needed to based on how I did it. Try again. Okay? Do I have anybody willing to share their example?
Mine's not medical.
That's okay.
So my concrete, I have a new baby.
God bless you.
Four months old.
Woof.
So I was at daycare, and I saw another baby eating solids. So that was my experience. There's another baby eating solids. My observation was, that baby looks really young, and they're eating solids pretty well. And then my next question was, can my baby eat solids now? So I asked the daycare worker, when do babies usually start eating solids? I started reading a whole bunch of blogs on it. And then I looked into different types of food, different types of solids that are available. And then my active experimentation is I'm going to ask my pediatrician. And then maybe Friday start feeding my baby solids because there's some controversy over 4 months or 6 months.
There is some controversy, yes. This family doctor can testify to that, but yes. So that's a great example, all right? So we do this all the time. Any other examples? Make eye contact with the presenter. That's very dangerous.
Mine isn't medical.
That's okay. Fling the mic back there.
And unfortunately, it's about a baby.
Hey, I got a six-month-old, so we'll all learn together. There's nothing in medical school prepares you for a baby, right? Yeah. Nothing.
So I had to learn how to empty this genie bin, you know, which is the most confusing bin I think they created.
Yes, it
for diapers. So I looked. My experience was observing it being done by my husband, who knows how to do it. I don't know how, but he knew. Reflective observation is I had to keep thinking about these steps because I will mess it up when I go to do it. Abstract conceptualization, knowing when to do it, and I'll practice doing it. And then I didn't reach active experimentation yet. That might be today to actually do it and not destroy it.
It's a perfect example. The dynamic is reversed in my household. I'm the one continually trying to convince my partner that he can empty the diaper bin. All right, cool. So how are you guys feeling about the four steps? Pretty comfortable? Makes some intuitive sense? All right, ready to take it to the next level? Let's do it. So we mentioned a few minutes ago, Kolb initiated this idea of learning styles. But as you probably got the sense when I was talking about it, it's a little clunky. Doesn't feel like something you can put to use right away. But let's just review this idea that there's these four quadrants. and that there are folks, according to Kolb, and we'll talk about some of the controversy about this at the end, but there are folks that are more comfortable being in one part of this cycle than other parts of the cycle. So let's fast forward to a couple of guys, Honey and Mumford. They looked at the Kolb cycle, and they looked at some of Kolb's early stuff on this idea of learning styles, and they thought, you know, we think there's something there, but we don't think it's quite ready for prime time. We're going to make this ready for prime time. So they developed this idea of the learning styles. And most of the time, when you hear medical educators talking about the learning styles, this is the theory they're talking about. So yes, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, all the stuff that you've heard before. But if you hear faculty development nerds talking about the learning styles, this is what it is. This is the theory. And we're going to learn about those. But before we learn about those, we're going to do another activity. So what I'd like for you to do is turn to page 4, and no peeking ahead. All right? It's extremely important for this activity that you don't think too hard about it. And we'll talk about, for some of you learning styles, that's going to be kind of tough. But just go with your initial gut feeling, okay? This is your lawn. It's a hot mess, right? Nobody wants their lawn to look like this, I hope, okay? It must be mowed by midnight tonight. But here's the problem. Your lawnmower just died. Okay? It's got to be mowed. It's a hot mess. Your lawnmower is dead. What are you going to do? Page 4, write it down. Don't think, just write. What are you going to do? Lawnmower just died. Don't think, just write. All right, everybody got something? Okay? All right, this one, if at all possible, I'd like to go all the way around. So I just need everybody, we can start the front. Yep, Brittany, awesome. And then let's go all the way around. Just what would you do? First thought, go.
My first thought was go buy another lawnmower.
Go buy another lawnmower.
Which I recognize is a little privileged.
Nope. All right, next.
Does the neighbor have a lawnmower we can borrow?
Okay. All right. I like it. Let me think about that one for a minute. Well, that's probably going to go here. Those two are kind of similar, actually, so we'll talk about it. There's a little overlap here. Okay.
Mine as well was to go buy a lawnmower or call a company to do it.
All right.
My first thought was to buy a lawnmower.
All right. Buy a lawnmower. Okay.
Try to fix it.
Tell me more about that. What would you do? What would be the first thing you would do to try to fix it?
Yeah, I would open it to see if it was a simple problem or a complex problem. If it was simple, I would try to fix it. If it's complex, I would ask for someone's help.
Okay, excellent. But your first thing would be, let me open up the guts of that lawnmower.
Yes.
Okay, I love it. Next.
My first thought when I read was lawn is badly overgrown, get husband to do it.
But let's find somebody to do this.
But yes, look up a person to get it done.
Kind of down. I'm probably going to put that down here. Okay.
Ask the neighbor to borrow their lawnmower.
All right, so borrow a lawnmower. Interesting. All right. Cool. Thank you. Let me try and place that in a little bit of context now. So we don't seem to have any, so we're going to talk about each of the four learning groups, learning styles, using that example. So I didn't have anybody who really wanted to sit and think about it first. No? Is that pretty fair? Everybody's like, let's do something. So there aren't any reflectors in this room. That's interesting. Feeling medicine is overloaded with reflectors, which drives me crazy a little bit, as we'll talk about. So if you're a reflector, you're going to stop and think about it first. What might be wrong with the lawnmower? What kind of options do I have? How am I feeling about this? Reflectors are feely kind of people usually. Am I upset? Do I need to process being upset and stressed about this before I can do something? Who else is involved? Who could I talk to? So reflectors are those learners that you're working with on the wards or in the office. If you ask them a question, they are not wired to jump right back out with the answer. They've got to think about it. And then they might think about it some more. And for all of you, since there are no reflectors in here, you're all like, come on, let go. But those are reflectors, okay? I have to think this through. Reflectors are cautious, observant types. Then we have the theorists. We might have some hybrid theorists in here. So the more sophisticated version of this theory is you can certainly have more than one style that you prefer. The theorist wants to go find the owner's manual and reads the entire thing in depth, all right, whether it's on paper or online. Let's look through this whole thing. Who else has had this problem? Maybe I'm going to Google that. What worked for them? So again, the theorist is doing some groundwork, but it's not a peer groundwork. The theorist is, give me something to look at, and let me see what the context is, and just go all the way through before I make a decision. So theorists don't jump to do things either, but you see how they're a little different than reflectors, who are more feely. Theorists are a little more thinky. Okay, so far? Now, you notice that there's two words down here, and so far they're the same words, but that's about to change. When I learned this theory, and most of the places I've worked with folks on this theory, this word in black is what I have heard. But for reasons that are not quite clear to me, at Ohio Health, and the folks I've worked with in MedEd here at Ohio Health, use a slightly different language, and there are lots of different versions of these. And those are in blue, Ohio Health, we blue. All right, so you may hear folks using the blue terms. Reflector and theorist are the same, but the next two are a little different. So theorists want to understand what's going on in great depth. They're very analytical and logical. These are the residents and students who are not satisfied with a quick explanation. These are the ones that when you give them an answer, they're like, okay, so then what next? And then what next? And then what next? And then what next? There are some theorists in family medicine, but not a ton, because you can imagine family medicine is where you need to know a lot of topics, but not necessarily in super great depth. So theorists are more likely to be super subspecialists, because whatever they need to know, they want to know everything down to the bottom, okay? I don't think we have a lot of theorists in here either, which is kind of interesting. Pragmatists, or the Ohio Health word, practical applicators. Think we got some of those. Why does this have to be done tonight? Did anybody think that and not write it down? What is it with this midnight deadline? This is Middleton, all right? This is Jen, this is me. The first thing I thought when I first heard this example was, why does that have to be done by midnight? What's the rush? Seriously. And then who can do it for me? So practical applicators, pragmatists, are extremely realistic, pragmatic people. They want to know why for everything. Why does it have to be done this way? Is there a better way that I can do it? When I was in kindergarten, we were given an assignment where we had to color, it was a Winnie the Pooh. You had to color in the Winnie the Pooh, and then you had to cut it out and make it all pretty. And I'm like, all right, well, if I'm going to cut it out, why don't I just color it like this, and who cares about the lines? And I was in trouble because I didn't follow the instructions because I didn't stay within the lines before cutting it out. Practical applicator. Why should I stay within the lines? I'm going to cut it out anyway. Why? All right? Practical applicators like to solve problems. They're problem solvers. And they're also, if you know social diffusion curve, and if you don't, I'll teach it to you, they are early adopters. When something new and cool comes out, they want it. Because, again, they like to solve problems. And if there's a more efficient way to do it, practical applicators want to do it. So I think we got a little bit of that up here. You know, all right, I need another lawnmower. Well, forget this fixing it, reading the lawnmower. Why don't I just buy another one? Why don't I just go get one from somebody? Putz around. What's the fastest way that I can do this? All right, get somebody else to do it. Last but not least are the activists or doers. Give me a screwdriver. Let's open this thing up and see what's going on. All right, let's do it. Let's go. Act first, think later. That's not always a bad thing, right? Let me tell you, surgeon who operated on my kid a couple months ago, pretty glad he was a doer because he just went in and did what had to get done, all right? So a lot of surgeons tend to be doers. Act first, let's go. They like experiences. They're kind of the thrill seekers, yay roller coasters, very open-minded. But these are the folks that when you're doing a group activity, volunteer to do things first, because they don't need to sit and think about it like the reflectors. They don't need to read three chapters like the theorists to feel comfortable to do something. They're not going to sit and go, why, like the practical applicators. The doers are like, let's go. Come on, let's do it. How do you feel about the four learning styles? Okay? Feeling okay? Where do you think you are? Circle on the bottom of your page which one you think you primarily identify with after that. again, what we test all of our residents when they come in as interns for their learning style, and you can be more, you can be kind of across the spectrum. So I'm definitely primarily a practical applicator, but I got some doer in me too. Boy, especially when I'm impatient, we're running behind. Let's go. And you can have reflector theorists. It's unusual to cross diagonally, if that makes sense. So usually you're going to be overlap with a style that's either above or to the side of you. Oh, where's the mic? Thank you.
Is there any relation with gender?
You know, that is an excellent question. I have not seen that explicitly studied. I will tell you, in 10 years of medical education, I can't say that I've seen any divide. You might kind of stereotypically think there are more girls who are reflectors and more dudes who are doers, but actually, especially as I think about the challenged residents I've worked with, it's pretty, there seem to be more dude reflectors, actually. There are more guys out there who are reflectors. And again, remember, I work in family medicine. We got a lot of reflectors. A lot of feelers, a lot of reflectors in family medicine. So that's a skewed sample. But I've never seen any studies saying that there's a division or that there's a preference one way or the other. Okay. Everybody got a sense about learning styles? So here they are. Again, with the Ohio Health language on the outside. So these are the same. When I first came to work here and everybody was talking about doers and practical applicators, it took me about 2 months to figure out that they were talking about the same theory that I had used before. Because it's just a little different. So here's our Kolb. And you can kind of see how Honey and Mumford overlaps on that, right? So let's take a minute and just do a little brainstorming here. Eraser. We don't have any reflectors in here, so we're not going to stop and think about it for a minute. We're just going to go, okay? So how do you think each of these types likes to learn? And there was a hint, because if we had reflectors, we wouldn't just jump in and do this. All right, so doers, practical applicators, reflectors, theorists. So let's start up here, because we got some doers in here. Doers, how do you think doers want to learn?
Hands-on.
What else? Any other thoughts for doers?
Fast,
yes. Anybody comfortable saying who's a self-identified doer in here? Anybody circle the doer? Okay. Anything else you would add here? How do you like to learn?
Doing different things, so, but similar with different problems.
Mm-hmm. So doers like new experiences, and if they want to see the different angles that are connected to things, right? So I want to know all the different ways how to do this. Fabulous. I think we got a lot of these in here. You're in good company. Okay. Practical applicators. How do practical applicators like to learn?
Cases, problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
May I add something?
Yes.
Try to solve a problem, trying and making a mistake, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We have one expression in Portuguese. You do wrong, and after you finish all your tries, you figure it out.
Yep, so the aphorism in American English is, you know, try again. So try, fail, try again. Keep going. Doers are not afraid of making a mistake. Awesome, thank you. Fabulous. Anything else? Practical applicators, problem solving, cases?
Learn from experience.
Experience. By But I would argue there's a specific type of experience for your practical applicator, speaking as one. It better be relevant, it better be important, and you better tell me why. Because I don't want to go do it just to do it. You have to convince me at the beginning why I need to do it. Practical applicators are shaking their heads. So it's not enough. So I started today's session. Do you remember what I said? Did I satisfy you, practical applicators, about why we were going to do what we were going to do? How you can use it with residents, you can use this with students, and in your own fellowship. So that's coming definitely from this frame of mind that I operate in. Why am I learning about this? Why do I need to learn about this? So experience, but remember, practical applicators are the three-year-olds of the medical education world. Why? Why do I need to learn this? If it's not relevant, ditch it. Next. All right, this is a little harder because none of us are in here. But let's just pretend like we're reflectors for a minute. How do you think reflectors like to learn?
Reading.
Mm-hmm.
Possibilities.
Yeah, say more about that. Say more about that.
Options.
I'm going to add one thing after that, which I think is maybe what, I hope what, we're speaking the same language. Space. Reflectors need space and time to contemplate these things. So they want to think about these things, but they are not, all right? These guys are not the hares. They're the tortoises. They need some time to digest everything. One other really important way that reflectors like to learn. Yes. Yep. So they want to journal privately and they want to talk about it. So in medical school, reflectors were the ones who were in study groups talking about all these things ad infinitum. If you were a practical applicator like me in medical school, you were like, crap, I'm go home, get done the relevant stuff and get going. All right. All of my friends were in this wonderful study group together. I went once and I'm like, I can't stand this. I'm done. Blah, blah, blah. Let's go. But that's what reflectors do. They want to talk and they want to think about this. So I do this all the time with my family medicine residents. So we have to debrief what happened and debrief it some more and think about all of these possibilities and options. And that's kind of how they're wired to work. Okay? How about theorists? How do you think theorists like to learn? Yes. Emphasis on the more. And the theorists want to do this, if possible, before they show up to whatever it is they have to do. Theorists like to be prepared. They want to come into that concrete experience already having done some of this, already having some of the legwork of that context figured out, all right? Theorists are really good at doing homework and giving themselves homework. I am married to a theorist, and let me tell you, that man reads, he reads over and over again his medical school textbooks, and the updated versions, of course, now that we're, you know, 10 to 15 years out. There's sitting on my dining room table right now is whatever the big pediatrics book is. That gotta have every single thing in depth. So theorists want to read, they want to read more, they want to read in depth. They're not satisfied. Practical applicators were like, give me the summary. What's the most important stuff? What do I need to know? Let's go. Theorists want every little detail. So details. This half likes not to be put on the spot, okay? They want time to prepare. This half is going to get impatient if you give them too much time to prepare, all right? They just, especially these guys, let's go. I'll follow up whatever I need to follow up later. Let's go. These guys will do some preparation if you tell them why it's important, okay? Questions about this? Sound kind of true? Yeah? There's a lot of controversy in the medical education faculty development world in terms of, you know, is this oversimplifying things? Do we have research that proves that this is really what people do, etc.? I'm practical applicator, less interested in all of that kind of stuff. I will leave that to the theorists and reflectors. But what I have found is that thinking about these helps me be a better educator. If I'm working one-on-one with a resident and I can figure out where they live here or a student, especially if they're in trouble. So if I have somebody who's really struggling, it might be because their primary, I say reflector just because that's what most folks in family medicine are, they're here But really, to be a good learner, you have to work at all steps of the model, right? So if I have somebody who's got a learning style preference, but they're not flexible enough to work in other spots, often when I'm developing remediation plans, this is one of the first things I try to figure out. And when I teach faculty how to develop remediation plans, we talk about this a lot. So yeah, it's a little reductionist, like all kind of theories are, but there are pieces of it that you can take and apply pragmatically to what you do. The other piece I want you to think about this is when you're doing teaching presentations, can you think about how you kind of, if you have a mix of these folks in your room, if all you do is say, show up and let's do something right off the bat, how are these guys gonna feel? And they're not gonna learn well. And guess what? Folks don't learn well when they're stressed. This is a hard concept, especially for these guys to figure out, because they have no fear. These guys have fear, okay? So you have to keep spaces comfortable emotionally for your learners if you want them to learn, because if you're stressed, you don't learn. If you're stressed, you don't learn. That's why pimping doesn't work unless it's with a doer. Because if your cortisol goes up, guess what? You're not making neural connections, okay? You're not learning anything other than protect myself from scary attending. Okay? Nobody learns that way. So as you're developing presentations, you want to think about how you incorporate each of these groups. And I, you know, working with the same learners over and over again as residency faculty, know who my learners are and know I got a lot of these folks, so I got to leave a lot of extra time when I put things, activities in the presentation for them to do things and to debrief and whatever. But even if you're working for a group that you don't know, thinking about making sure I've hit some of this is important. And the cool thing is, the stuff I'm going to teach you about presentation skills starting this morning, and then when we meet again next time, if you do that stuff, you'll get this. So again, very practical applicator. I don't want to think about each of these things every time I make a presentation. But if I use the right skill set to build a presentation, I'll get all these guys. And those, any theorists in the room can sit and think more hard about how they want to do that. Ask me questions. What I'd like for us to do to wrap up is just take a couple of minutes on the bottom of page 5. And just, now we're on the reflecting part of the model here, which I'm really glad we're doing that because we don't have any of these folks in here. So it's important for those of us who are not reflectors to make sure we don't blow past those steps. So let's just take a minute or two. How are you going to use this now? Now you've got this. Let's reflect so we can get to experimentation here on Kolb, okay? How are you going to use this when you teach? And how are you going to use this as a learner for the next 5 months of your fellowship? So anything that comes to mind, just jot down real quick. You don't have to share it. And then we'll take a quick break. But let's force ourselves to reflect for a minute. Writing it down makes it real. Okay? And then if you want to have any other final questions or discussion, and then we'll roll on. And now I know why you guys don't like to have a lot of discussion, because I don't have any of these folks in here. It's all good. Any final questions or comments before we take a break? Yes, ma'am.
Fine, like according to the type of learner they are, like if they're visual learner or audio, just write.
Does it overlap?
Yeah, is it?
So there is, you know, everybody talks about the grand theory of physics. There's currently buzz in the medical education world about, is there a grand theory of medical education that would incorporate that model in with this model, in with a couple of other models that I'm not going to share with you guys because practical applicator, I don't think they're as useful in everyday life. It's a good question. There's a lot of debate about it. I don't think there's any firm answer. You can probably imagine a little bit for yourself where you might think some of those folks lie, right? Like doers are probably a little more kinesthetic in visual. Reflectors are probably a little bit more auditory just because they need that bounce back out loud. But if anything has been published definitively lining that up or proving that, I'm not aware of it. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I'm a practical applicator. I only read the literature that looks useful to me.
What's your question?
Okay.
Microphone.
Thank you. Trying to be a good steward of the microphone. Awesome.
What if there's cross between learners? Mm-hmm. And how do you, explain... I mean, how do we explain to ourselves that this is how we're going to improve it? Because we might be practical applicators, but we might have pinch of doers mm-hmm. and a dollop of reflectors.
That is an excellent, so I just gave you the bare bones this morning. Most folks have a primary style, but many also have a secondary style, and they're usually adjacent. So you might have a practical applicator who's also, who's a, you know, what we might say a practical applicator theorist with a hyphen in between. And those are folks who still want to know why and want to problem solve, but they want to do it in more depth, so to speak. You can have practical applicator doers, as I'm pretty sure I am, or a doer practical applicator. Reflector theorists, holy schmoly, you get in the room with a reflector theorist, you're going to be talking for a long time because they got all these little details they want to think about, and vice versa. Very unusual to cross. When they do cross, the language that gets used is balanced. So if you have a balanced practical applicator, that's somebody who has a fair amount of reflecting in them. So they're able comfortably to navigate kind of both sides. Same thing, you could have a balanced doer or a balanced theorist. You can have a theorist who's balanced, who wants to think about all this stuff, but then they're very anxious to go and do it and try and see what happens. So there are a lot more complex permutations than what we did today. But you're exactly right. It's reductionist to say that everybody only fits in one square. Your intuition is correct there. And when we develop remediation plans for residents, when we formally type them, we look at that proportion very carefully so that we can make sure we tailor the remediation plan to what their strengths are so they can kind of build those up first, and then the next step is to help them get more comfortable operating in other quadrants, and there's strategies for doing that. So if you ever have a resident or a student who's really struggling, engage with your faculty development person because they know all this stuff. And we're total nerds. We love to apply this stuff to kind of help folks become better learners. And there's a lot of folks who get out of medical school who still struggle. And you guys see that. I'm sure you saw it in residency and you see it now. So that's folks like me go to fellowship to help those people and to help you guys.
Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you'll rate and review this podcast and share it with your colleagues and your friends. So you don't miss any of our new content, make sure you are subscribing to PCIC podcasts. PCIC is sponsored by PalMed, where our aim is to advance palliative care globally and ensure all clinicians have the latest knowledge and skill. To access more PCIC content, please visit palmed.us to review our extensive open access PCIC curriculum.